All right. Good morning, everybody. I would first of all thank you for waking up so early to be able to learn Torah together. For those in Los Angeles, at least. Today, I want to talk about an interesting shaila that I got a couple of weeks ago, and then I sort of ignored it and didn't come back to it. And it happens to be the fellow followed up with me this week, and it relates to this week's parsha, but in somewhat of a roundabout way. But I thought it was a fascinating shaila. I'll read you the email that I received from this fellow. Shalom Rav Leibowitz, my name is, he tells me his name, I'm Shir Gimel Hesder at Keren Biavna. I am originally from Cape Town, South Africa, but have since made Aliyah and now live at the yeshiva. Without overcomplicating it, I need to explain a little bit of background behind the question. Along with every group of soldiers during wartime, there is a rabbi and other soldiers from the Rabbanut Tzva'it who are responsible to deal with all religious matters. This often includes kashrus, Shabbos, etc., but their primary role is to deal with the bodies of the fallen soldiers on the battlefield and under fire. This involves identification through edus, putting the body in a body bag, gathering body parts if needed, and sending them back for kvura. My job is to train these rabbis. While a lot of our training is done on realistic dolls, it is often impossible to bring them with us into the field, meaning that we have to use real living people. This means telling someone to play dead and having a rabbi deal with him in a series of actions which culminate with putting him in a body bag. This training is absolutely necessary for the rabbis to practice. So his first question is there a problem with playing dead, with volunteering to play to pretend to be dead, to the extent that you're actually put in a body bag as the other soldiers are training? Is there some halachic issue with doing that? We're familiar, there's a concept of al tiftach pel satan. I know that as a young child, I was told if any of my friends, you know, had hurt themselves playing ball or something, or were on crutches, we were told, no, don't walk around with those crutches, don't pretend to have those crutches, because al tiftach peh, you shouldn't pretend to have a problem that you don't have. You shouldn't walk around as if you are a blind man, if you are in fact able to see, because al tiftach peh, we do not engage in activities that pretend that something has befallen us. So is there a problem of playing dead, of acting like a dead person? So that's his first shaila. His second question was relating to this. The second question was, and if you assume that they're allowed to do it, is it appropriate? Is it the right thing to do to write some sort of tefillah, a short tefillah for the soldier who's going to be playing dead and be wrapped in a body bag, to make him feel a little less uneasy about the situation? For example, this fellow had composed a tefillah. It would be in Hebrew, but he wrote it out for me in English, along the lines of Ribbono Shel Olam, you know that I'm only doing this to help the rabbi train, so that if chas v'chalila he needs to do this for real, he'll be able to do this with maximum professionalism and kavanah meis. Yehi ratzon that if there was ever a gzeira against me, that I should be in a body bag, may this be the carrying out of the gzeira. And may my mesiras nefesh now, and all my activities as a soldier in Sahal, be mechaper on any averos. So is there any problem with composing such a tefillah? So these are his two questions. So I thought that the second question first, we're not going to deal with it at such length. I think it's obvious that if you're going to do this, there's nothing wrong with reciting such a tefillah. Although Rav Salvechik certainly was opposed, but many gedolim were opposed to us writing our own tefillos and coming up with our own nusach ha-tefillah. That's talking about making a nusach ha-tefillah that's going to be incorporated into the seder of tefillah that we have in shul, into regular davening. But the idea that any of us could reach out to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and any of us could just daven sincerely, b'lev shalem, to the Ribbono Shel Olam with anything, that certainly is true. That certainly we have the ability to do. And I thought he did a fine job expressing the tefillah. I thought it was a very nice idea to say that if there ever was a gezeira that I should be in a body bag, may this be the fulfillment of that gezeira. It reminds me of what we learn in Sefer Yonah, Tana that there was a gzeira against Nineveh that Nineveh ne'apachas, but ne'apachas could mean in the that it could be overturned, could mean in the literal sense, that it was going to be completely destroyed, or the whole place was going to turn over with tshuva, that everybody was going to do tshuva, everybody was going to improve. So that, and one way or the other, it's a fulfillment of the nevuah. You do have this idea that there are ways to fulfill things. It's like the Gemara says in Masechah Shabbos, sometimes a person has a certain mazel of ma'adim, that he's going to be engaged with blood, and it could be that he'll be a murderer, or it could be he'll be a sheichet, or a mayel, or something like that. You do have this idea that there are multiple ways to fulfill a particular gezeira, and some letov, and some not so much letov. So I thought the idea of such a tefillah, to say it in such a way, is a very beautiful way of saying it. So I'd rather focus on the first part of the question. Should it make somebody uneasy? Is it halachically problematic even to pretend to be dead in order to be able to carry out this action? So this is like a halachic topic that's somewhat ashkafic as well, meaning there is no halacha in Shulchan Aruch that I know of that says explicitly, don't do anything that is tiftach pel satan. But there are a number of halachos and certainly many minhagim that are based on the idea of not being posech pel satan, of not opening your mouth to the satan. So I think if we discuss and we analyze what's behind, you know, that concept and what it includes, what's included in that general idea, what the sources are, we could understand better whether it applies in this case. You know, there are two different phrases that Chazal use. They use the phrase al tiftach pel l'satan, and they use the phrase bris krusa l'svasayim, that there's a covenant with a person's mouth, that what the words that come out of your mouth matter. And it could be that they have different meanings and are brought in different contexts. So I think if you look at it carefully, you'll find that there are essentially three categories in Chazal where we have this kind of thing, that be careful what you say or what you do, because it might be a harbinger of things to come. It might reflect on what's going to happen. First of all, first category would be when one describes future punishment that's going to come min hashamayim to him. Yaakov and Rachel are running from Laban's house. Yaakov says that whoever has the trephim, whoever has the idols that were taken from Laban, should die, and soon after Rachel dies. Of course, Yaakov has no idea that Rachel has it. He does not mean to curse his own beloved wife. That was never the intention, but soon after Rachel dies. Why? You say something, it has an impact. In the beginning of Sefer Yeshayu, the Navi says, Kistom Ayinu, this Chazal quoted in a number of places, that we were like Sodom, and then Shimuna Katsine Sodom. And then sure enough, the follow-up is, you are now treated like members of Sodom. That's our connection to this week's Parsha. So that's one, where a person says that I should be punished, or that punishment should happen, and even if he doesn't really mean it, and even if he doesn't mean it in a literal sense, and he doesn't intend for it to happen, or he thinks it's based on a premise that's not true, but just by saying it, that can invite that punishment. A second category is where one doesn't necessarily bring divine punishment, but just disaster, that some sort of disaster, something terrible is going to happen, that someone says something that will happen, and it doesn't only work in the negative, it works in the positive as well. For example, in Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Zayin, Goliath says, send out a warrior, and if he strikes me down, let's see if he could strike me down. If he strikes me down, then the Jewish people will win. It will be this one-on-one battle instead of a battle of armies. And the Gemara in Sota Daf Mem Beis Am Beis tells us that is why he was struck down. The Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochum Mishumra Meir, Bishlosha Mekomos Lachado Piv La'oso Rasha. There were three places where that Rasha said something, where Goliath said something, and because he said something, it led to his own downfall. Echad Berulchem Ish, V'yad Oilai, that pick a man and let him go against me. And V'idachim Yuchal Yilachim Iti, V'ikani, V'idach Dekam Leila David, Akelev Anochi, Ki Atah Ba Oilai B'makalos. He said, let him come battle me and smite me. He said, what am I, a dog that you come at me with sticks? And all of these things led to his downfall, because he said those words, that he's going to, that there's going to be someone that will strike him, even though he didn't mean that. He was saying it sarcastically. I'm a giant. Who are you going to send? This little kid, this little pitzel is going to come and he's going to fight me? That's ridiculous. He didn't mean it, but nevertheless, saying those words, in fact, had an impact. In fact, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Beis Amud Aleph, gives us another example of this category. The Gemara tells us about Yehu, who wanted to attack the Nevi'ei HaBaal, and he said that he's going to make some sort of secret operation where we're all going to worship the Baal, and he expresses that, you know, Achav serves Baal a little bit, but I'm going to do a lot, as a way of expressing the kind of covert operation he plans on running. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Beis, tells us that ultimately he violated Avodah Zarah because of that. My Garmalay, says the Gemara, what caused him to violate Avodah Zarah? Am Rabbi, Bris Krusalus Vasayim. One needs to be careful with what they say. Shenemar Achav Ever Avar Abal Ma'at, Yehu Yavdenu Harbe. He said that Achav worshiped Baal a little bit, I'm going to worship Baal a lot. But again, this works for the positive as well, for someone to speak in a positive way. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan says the Gemara Moed Katan Daf Yud Ches Amar Aleph. Minayin Shebris Krusalus Vasayim. What's the source for Bris Krusalus Vasayim, for the idea that your words matter? Shenemar, Pasuk says, by the Akedah. Vayomer Avram, here's another parsha connection. Vayomer Avram el Na'arav, Shavu Lachem Po Imachamor, Vani Vanar Nelcha Adkov, Nishtachve, Vina Shuva Aleichem. Avram Avinu says, you guys wait here, I'm going to go with Yitzchak up the mountain, and then we're going to do what we need to do, and then we're going to return. And sure enough, at that time, Avram Avinu didn't know that they were going to return. He thought only he was going to return. But Vistaya Milsa Dada Tarvayu, by speaking in a positive way, by speaking as if they are going to return, sure enough, that's exactly what happened, that Yitzchak was able to return as well. So we see, we find that it works in the positive as well. And certainly, there's a lot of value in speaking in positive terms. I think probably in the last generation, the person who made the biggest roshem in terms of speaking only positively was probably the Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Lubavitcher Rebbe would not, famously would not refer to a hospital as a Beit Cholim. He wouldn't call it a house for sick people, a place of sick people. No, it was a Beit Refuot. It was a place for healing. That's how you refer to a hospital. He had this knack of always speaking in a positive way. He would never refer to, I just heard last night, and my friend Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg did an interview with the Lubavitcher, with the head of the Lubavitcher Shluchim, and he said that the fellow said that he brought Rabbi Klotarsky, I forgot his name, Klodarsky, I think, that he brought someone from the Far East, from Bangkok, to meet the Rebbe once. And the Rebbe said, you're from a place that's not called near. And he just couldn't say the words far about a Jew. That a Jew is never far. A Jew is never far away. A Jew is always close. So there's this value. That's a value from Chazal. It's a value from Tanakh. A value in speaking in a positive way. That even if we're speaking sarcastically, even if we're speaking in a way that we don't really mean it, or it's al tanai, we don't speak in a negative way. That's what the Gemara says. That akil las chacham afilu al tanai. That if someone, if a chacham makes a klala, even if it's al tanai, if he says a curse, it's going to be fulfilled. Even if it's only conditional. All of that is based on the value of speaking. But then there's a third category. Not speaking about being punished, that we deserve punishment, nor speaking about terrible things happening or positive things happening, but acting something out. And this you have, you know, Avram is told in Bereshis Perek Yudbeis to walk the entire land because it's going to be given to his children. That's symbolic. Act out as if it is yours, and then one day it will become yours. And that category has, each category, there are multiple examples in Chazal. But it's that third category that probably is the basis for what we've heard as children, not to walk with a cane if you don't need it, or with crutches if you don't need it, not to walk or go around in a wheelchair if you do not need it. The Gemara in Ksubas Daf Samech Samar Aleph says that if a person pretends to be blind, then ultimately they will be blind. The Gemara tells us, Hamasameyas Eino, it's a brisa, Hamasameyas Eino, Vametzaveyas Bitno. If a person pretends to be blind, or he pretends to have a bloated stomach as if he's starving, Vemekapeach Hashoko, a person pretends to be unable to walk, Eino niftar min ha'olam ad sheyavo lidei kach. By the time he leaves this world, he will have already gotten to that point. Hamakabel tzedaka ve'in tzarich l'kach, sofo eino niftar min ha'olam ad sheyavo lidei kach. If a person collects tzedakah and does not require that tzedakah, he does not need that tzedakah, by the time he leaves this world, he will need the tzedakah, simply by acting it out, acting as if you're suffering a misfortune, that will bring the misfortune on you. Not saying anything, just acting. In fact, the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Nun Zayin and Beis, that most of us probably learn almost every year on Tisha B'Av, the Chorban Agadatas, the Gemara tells us, Amar Rava kol mili lichsi inish b'nafshe. You want to demonstrate something. You want to learn an area of halacha. You want to learn what the proper makom of tefillin is. So you demonstrate on your own bicep where the tefillin goes, or on your own head where the tefillin goes. And you could do that with any area of halacha, with your own hands, how to take a lulav. Everything you could do, you could be chazi l'nafshe, except for, says the Gemara, except for kol mili lichsi inish b'nafshe bar mishchita v'davar acher, except for shchita and davar acher. Davar acher always means in Shas the unmentionable, something that's just like too horrible to even mention. So shchita, we know a person should not, you know, make that motion with a knife to show that you're going to the way to shecht is by shechting over here on a human being. You don't do that. I remember I was talking to a Talmud once who was at his Rebbe's house, and the Rebbe was dressed as the Kohen Gadol for Purim, and he took out a schala knife and he started teaching Hilchos Shechita on the Talmidim. He wasn't actually cutting them, but probably that was not appropriate. You're not supposed to demonstrate Hilchos Shechita on a human being. One should be very, very careful about that, the Gemara says. Why? He's being careful. He's not actually shechting him. Yeah, but not Shechita. And what's Davar Acher? Sarash is Davar Acher means Tzara'as. That you don't demonstrate, negate Tzara'as on yourself. It's as if you're saying that you yourself are going to suffer from tzara'as. I'm not sure how one would demonstrate negate tzara'as on themselves. I don't know if it means like you take like a white marker or something and color white on yourself and say, or a red marker, you know, and say this is what the nega would look like. I'm not sure exactly how one would do it. I once had a fellow come over to me in shul after davening, and he said that he has a serious shaila and please take it seriously. I said, okay. He said that he has a rash, some sort of skin irritation, and he has a friend who's a doctor in shul. So he went over to his friend, happens to be a cardiologist. So he went over to his friend, who's a cardiologist, and he asked him a dermatological question, because, you know, a doctor's a doctor, right? So he went over to his cardiologist friend, and he said, what's this rash? And the cardiologist, thinking, like, I'm a cardiologist, what do you want from me? Said in a sarcastic tone, he said, it's tzara'as. And this guy realized that his friend, the cardiologist, happens to be a Kohen also. So he came over to me in shul after davening. He said, am I a mitzora? I asked the Kohen what the psak is about a discoloration, and he paskin that I have tzara'as. So am I in fact a mitzora? There is a discussion whether a person can even have tzara'as bizman hazeh. Do we assume that tzara'as disappeared, that it doesn't exist, that it's like this spiritual disease, and it's because it's a spiritual disease and the world is bereft of a certain level of spirituality that we don't have tzaras. Mori v'Rabbi Rav Shechter did not think so. Mori v'Rabbi Rav Shechter thought that we do have tzaras, we just don't paskin it. So because we don't have a kohen to paskin it, so mele, no one has the status of a mitzora. But probably the same skin discolorations that they had, there are probably people walking around with something that would be tzara'as if someone were to paskin it. So if you assume like that, that's where the fellow's question came in. So one has to be careful. You don't say that a person has tzara'as. You don't say this about a person. There are examples about the other two categories throughout Shas as well. In the first category, the Gemara in Brachos, for example, in Daf Samach, tells us, Braisa, that if someone goes into the Beis HaMerechatz, he should recite a tefillah. The Yiratzom of Necha Hashem Elokai Shetatzileni Mizeu Kayotzibau Va'al Yerabi Dvar Kalkola V'Avon V'im Yerabi Dvar Kalkola V'Avon Te'misasi Kapara L'Kola V'Nosai. So Amar Abaye Lo Lema Yinishachi. Abaye says, no, don't say that. Don't say that if I something terrible happens, let my death be a Kapara. You're not dying. You don't know of anything. You're not sick. You know, there's no reason to believe you're dying. To suggest that if you die, your misa should be a kapara. When someone is dying, they would say something like that. But to say that when you're not dying, that's totally inappropriate. Or earlier in Maseches Brachos, the Gemara in Daf Yotes in Maseches Brachos also has that kind of comment, where the Gemara says that a person, when he does Tziduk Adin, he should say, Ribono Olamim Harbi Chatasi Lufanecha V'lo Nefrata Mimeni Echon Minei Elef, that I've done so many Averos, you haven't even given me 1/1000th of the punishment that I deserve. Amar Abaye Lomi Baye Leile Inish Lemeimar Hachi. Don't say that. Why would you say that? Hashem, I deserve more punishment. You don't ask for punishment. You also have examples of the second category, where a person describes a future disaster that could happen. The Gemara tells us in Ksubas Tav Chesam and Beis, the different words of Nechama that were said, brachos of Menachemin, when people are being Menachim Avel. So the Gemara tells us, in Ksubas, Achenu am Yugoyim am Dukan be'evel azeh, one of the brachos that was suggested was that those who are suffering this avelus, tenu levavchem lachkor zos, you need to pay attention to this, zos yomedes la'ad, the death is something that's it's a reality in this world, nisuvu misheshes yimei bereshes, rabim shasu, many people have already drunk from the cup of death, Rabim Yishtu, and many people will in the future. K'mishta Rishona Kach Mishta Achronim, just like it's happened before, it will happen again for others. And the Gemara says, again, it's Abaye, Amar Abaye, Rabim Shasulema, Rabim Yishtu Lolema. We may know it's true. It may be one of those things that are certain in life, like taxes, whatever. We may know that it's true, that death is a certainty in life. But don't say Rabim Yishtu. Don't invite it. Don't say that the Chassam Sofer there asks. Well, why not? Everybody does die. What's so terrible about it? So he says, the Gemara may be assuming like the opinion that there's no death in Yemos HaMashiach and that not everybody does die. But the Pashup Shad is, even if everybody does die, you don't talk about it. Don't say that you're going to die. Now, what's the explanation of this? Why is it that we're not allowed to say such things? So there's a famous Chuvas HaRashba, where the Rashba writes in Chelek Aleph Simen Tav Ches, that speech is inherently powerful. It's just more powerful than we know it to be, or than we think it to be. The Rashba writes, that's why the Gemara tells us, a birchas hedyot al te kala be'enecha, that if even an idiot, even a nobody, gives you a bracha, it should not be taken lightly, because the words mean something, even if it's not a big tzaddik. That's what someone asked Rav Moshe Feinstein once, why he gives brachas when people ask for brachas. He said, well, it's twofold. First of all, anybody can give a bracha, because a birchas hedyot al teikala be'enecha. So I'm a hedyot, so I give a bracha. He says, and second of all, he said, I've tried to get out of it. I've tried to tell people, Rav Moshe writes, isn't true, I've tried to tell people, I know you're only asking for a bracha because you think, since I'm a Rosh Yeshiva, you probably think I'm someone special because I have a job as a Rosh Yeshiva, but I'm not really, I'm really nobody, I'm really a nothing, I'm really not special. He said, but then, every time I try to do that, the people say, oh, what an unav, look how humble he is. So he says, it doesn't work, like when I try to get out of it, like they just say that, so it's just easier to just give the bracha, which is remarkable, that Rav Moshe, like, like his way of thinking. They probably think I'm so great because I'm the Rosh Yeshiva of MTJ. If ever there was a Rosh Yeshiva that made the institution more than an institution making the Rosh Yeshiva, you know, it's Rav Moshe and MTJ. You know, MTJ was Rav Moshe. It was only because of Rav Moshe that it was. And it's only because of Rav David Shav Rav Shlema. It was only because of Rav David that it continues to be. But Rav Moshe, that's not the way he saw things. Rav Moshe was an unusual anav. But that's the idea of a birchas hedil taltei kala beinecha. Words actually matter. It really makes a difference. There's a famous maysa with the rugged shaver. I think Rav Zevin quotes this maysa in Ishim Vishitos, that the rugged shaver was once sitting with another very chashuv rav, and someone came and asked the rugged shaver for a bracha. So the rugged shaver said, nope. I don't give brachas. Not my thing. He was a chassid, but he was not a rebbe. He did not give brachas. So the rav that was sitting with him, there are different versions of who that rav was, but the rav that was sitting with him said, Rabbeinu, you know, the Gemara says even a birchas hedyot I'll take al beinecha, even an idiot's bracha should not be something taken lightly. Kal v'chomer, your bracha. So the rugged shaver said, I have an idea. Instead of me giving a bracha with a kal v'chomer, why don't you give a bracha? You don't even need a kal v'chomer. It'll be mamash birchas hedyot. So the rugged shaver was known to have a sharp tongue. But that's one basis for this, that when one speaks, that words actually matter. Acting it out is explained by Ramban ala Torah. Why acting it out matters. The Ramban writes, Vida, the Ramban, Bereshis Perek Yud Beis, Ki kol gzeiras irin kasher teitze mikoch gzeira el poel dimyon, tia gzeira miskayemes al kolponim. That when a gzeira is made with an active expression of it, when you act out what's going to be, that's a stronger gezeira, meaning very often you have nevuos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells the Navi, tells Yecheskel, act like an avel, act out avelus. Why? Why does Yecheskel have to act out avelus if he's not in fact an avel? Does he have to sit shiva on the valley of dry bones? Why does he have to do that? And the idea is that you have to act out because that makes the nevuah a more powerful nevuah when it's acted out. And therefore, Rav Shachter often quotes that the Nesivus explains, that's why we have simanim on Rosh Hashanah. Why is it? Really? Because I eat a date, so now yitamu sonenu, now all of a sudden my enemies are going to be wiped out because I ate a date? So he said, no, the ikar is the tefillah. That when you daven, the tefillah is more powerful when the tefillah is accompanied by a poel dimyon. So it's the hiratzon that's the ikar. The date is the poel dimyon that's associated with that tefillah. So when you act something out of the negative also, it has a certain koach, it has a certain power to it. And that's the basis. That's the basis for this idea. Obviously, the first category is easiest to explain. That when you say, I deserve so much punishment, okay? Marsha writes in Mesach Smoit Katan, Hodas Baldin, Kamei Eidim Dami. You say you deserve such punishment? Good. So that's exactly what you're going to get, right? So there's logic to each of these categories. It's not just magic, it's not superstition. So when you act something out, that has a that lends power to a nevuah, to a tefillah, and therefore one should not act in a way that something terrible has befallen him. Now, there are many examples in Halacha where we have this. The Shulchan Aruch Pasnas and Ilchus Avelus, that when you come to be mechabit somebody and to stand, if you see someone standing, if you can tell the guy to sit down, unless he's an avel or a chola, because it sounds like you're telling him shave ba'avelu shalcha, so you have to be careful of what you say, not to speak in such terms. The Shulchan Aruch Harav writes in Shmiras Hagufa and Nefesh that ein la'av ve'ein lasos mora latinok bedavar tamei, could go lomar chatul o kelav yikhuhu, that you shouldn't scare a child by saying a dog is going to take you away or a cat is going to attack you. I don't know what parent speaks to a child that way anyway, but you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't speak to a child in that way, because again, we have to be careful how we speak. The Levush and Sim Kuflam Beis quotes a minag that if a person's parents are alive, they don't recite Kaddish, because it's ki'ilu, they're saying. There's even a minag in most places in Klal Yisrael that I'm aware of, where before Yizkar, they announce Yizkar, and all the people who have parents walk out of the room. They do not stay in for Yizkar. It's a question whether that's appropriate or not, but there is definitely such a minhag tzitz Eliezer is a tshuva, where he gives six reasons for that minhag, but the most poshut reason is that you don't want to invite something on yourself. So back to our story. So is this guy allowed? Are these people allowed to play dead? So we're already at the 10:05 mark. So I'm supposed to stop right now. But give me 1 minute to finish this up, right? Is he allowed to play dead? The answer is undoubtedly yes. Undoubtedly yes. For three reasons. First of all, it's pikuach nefesh. You're trying to train an army over here, right? This is something that these rabbanim are going to need to be trained for the ultimate kavod achron, and they're going to need to be able to get these bodies back. There's no doubt that it's mutter. Reason number two: the best way to counter such a negative acting is with a tefillah. So that tefillah that's suggested actually makes an impact. That you're saying, no, this isn't playing dead. This is a fulfillment of the gezeira that I otherwise would have had. And also, we do find in a number of places in halacha that dafka when it comes to being mazkir yom hamisa, that we're less hesitant. You would think it would be worse. We're less hesitant. When it's talking about punishment and things of that nature, that we don't like to talk about. But, for example, the Aruch HaShulchan writes in Hilchos Aveilos and Siman Shin Lamed Tes that it's perfectly permissible for a living person to prepare tachrichin for himself, to buy tachrichin. Why is it that we're allowed to and encouraged to buy a burial plot when we're still alive? Isn't that al tiftach peh? No, it's tov lahaskir yom hamisa, hachai yitein alibo, that when we think about the yom hamisa, that gives us a certain sense of how to properly live, so that when the yom hamisa comes, we will have lived the kind of life that we can be proud of, and go up l'achar me'ev asim in front of the kisei hakavod, and present our case as people who live lives totally as ovdei Hashem. So when I read this email to Rav Schechter, and I asked him what he thought, so he got a good cry in, of course. He was very emotional about the fact that this is what people have to do, that lo aleinu rachman al son should never, this practice should never come into to being. But he thought it was an excellent idea to incorporate such a tefillah for people that obviously have to carry out this mission. Okay, so that is our Dvar Halacha. Maybe a little something on the Parsha, right? You wanted a little something on the Parsha. Okay. In Judaism, names are very, very important. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos and elsewhere that Kishmo Kenu, that a person is very often, the Midrashim say it explicitly, that when parents name a child, they have a little bit of a Ruach HaKodesh, that the name actually means something, that the name is going to express who the child is going to be. And it therefore behooves a parent to be very careful about how to choose a name for a child. And the way the practice now certainly is not to choose a name, but to name after someone, to take a name that's already been used, because you see that it worked. You see that it was, and we don't name after Rishayim for that reason. You don't want to take a name that was that a Russia had, because that name obviously is not Poel the right kind of hopes and aspirations for the child. Now, Avram Avinu is a very, very old man, and he does not have children. And then finally, he has a child, and then another child. And he names the child. So the first child has the most beautiful name, Yishmael. Yishmael, what a beautiful name, that Hashem should listen or has listened to his tefillos. That's a beautiful name. On the other hand, he then has a second son, and this is the first one to Sarah. And what does he call it? What does he call this child? Yitzchak. Why? Ki tzachaka Sarah. What does Yitzchak mean? It means laughter, a joke. Right? That's what you're going to call the child? Yishmael, if objectively, I know we're trained to think otherwise because of everything we know about these two characters, but objectively speaking, Yishmael is a much, much nicer name than Yitzchak is. How could he name him Yitzchak? And not only that, Yitzchak is the one that carries his legacy. Ki bi Yitzchak yikari l'chazera. It's unbelievable that Yitzchak, it sounds like Yishmael failed despite his name, and Yitzchak was successful despite his name. So Rav Shimshon Pinkus explains that no, Yitzchok is something very, very powerful. The Gra in Divrei Eliyahu points out that the pasuk Kikol Hasirin Tachas Hasir Kein schok haksil. The Medrash says, Omrim li ilani macha, lama ein kolchem holich, that they say to fruit-bearing trees, why don't I hear your voice? Amalei, ein anu tzrichen perusenu mi'idin aleinu. We don't need to make noise. Our peros are made about us. And the ilani srak, the non-fruit-bearing trees, they make noise. Because they don't have any fruits to testify on their behalf and attest to their value. The Medrash is telling us that the plant life has two advantages over the world of domain, right? The first is that plants grow things of value. It grows payrolls. And second, they can be used as firewood. So the plant that doesn't have the first advantage has to rustle its branches. It has to show off what advantage it does have. It has to show off its bushes, its branches, that it creates a sense of noise that draws attention to its only value. Similarly, says the Gra, human beings are superior to animals in two critical ways. First, we have intelligence, and second, we have the ability to laugh. A thorn bush has to brag about its ability to be used as firewood. The fool who doesn't have intelligence has to emphasize the only thing that distinguishes him from animal life, a sense of humor. So the fool is always laughing, says the Gra, because he's got nothing else that highlights his own maila. Apparently, a sense of humor, says Rav Pinkus, is something that animals are incapable of and truly distinguish us from animal life. Now, what is it about humor that's so special and that's so defining? So Pinkus points out, what do we generally find funny? You know, you go to like the most watched YouTube videos of like, you know, in the early days of YouTube at least. What do people find funny? You know, that there's a there was a wedding and the minister and the bride and the groom all fell into the swimming pool because someone tripped on somebody or whatever. Ha ha, so funny. 20 million people watch it and get a kick out of it. Why is that funny? Why is it at all funny? It's so unfortunate, right? Why is that at all funny? What's funny about it is that it's unexpected. That here people are dressed up in their finest and they're so careful to make their tie just so and everything, and then they fall into the water and the whole canopy comes down and everything and millions of views. Laughter comes about when we see something totally unusual or totally unexpected. You know, the more unusual, the funnier it is. Animals are incapable of appreciating the irony of a chidush, of something unusual, something strange. They're simply not wired to understand the humor in a dog being dressed up in a little doggy tuxedo or something absurd like that. They can't appreciate that. Man is expected to relate to God. But how do we relate to something so beyond our comprehension? If we think of Hashem as a great doctor, as a rofei cholim, we're missing the point. It's true, but we're missing the point. If we think of the Ribbono Shel Olam as this super rich being, he owns the whole world, Hashem Aretz U'Melo'ah, we may be right, we're not incorrect, but we're totally missing the point. The best understanding we can have is the idea that Hashem is a Mechadesh, that he has no limits. That if you were to ask somebody, can you take the entire North America and fold it up and put it in a suitcase, in a little suitcase? The answer is, obviously, that doesn't, what does that question even mean? It's absurd. But there's nothing, because there's nothing in the entire history of human existence that would suggest that's possible. We can't think beyond our expectations. God, however, the Ribbono Shel Olam, has no limitations whatsoever. The defining characteristic of Hashem is that he is Kol Yochol. That which we wouldn't even think of as a possibility, he can do. Our requirement of Halachta B'drachav would therefore demand that we have a little bit of that Koach HaChidush, that we not allow expectations and limitations to define us. And that is the power of Tzchok. Appreciating and creating the unexpected. That's what defines our very humanity. That's what connects us to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So yes, Yishmael represents that the Ribbono Shel Olam had finally listened to the tefillah for a child. And that's a beautiful name. And the Medrash highlights that it's a beautiful name. And Yishmael became who we became despite that name. And that's why there's a Tana, Rabbi Yishmael. We weren't afraid to use that name again. But the name of Avram's second child, Yitzchak, represents something much more profound and a far greater legacy. The circumstances of Yitzchak's birth were entirely unexpected, beyond anybody's wildest dreams. And at what point do you give up and say, it's just not happening, we're not going to have a family? When the man is 100, the woman is 90? Probably by then, you've given up already. It just doesn't even make any sense. Who ever heard of a 100-year-old man having a child with a 90-year-old woman? His life was about defying all expectations. And only a man who has no limits can ask his father to bind him even more tightly on the Mizbeach so that he could be slaughtered in the service of Hashem. Yitzchak represents a willingness to expect the unexpected, to grow beyond our own expectations. From the moment our children are born, we all have unrealistic expectations of them, that they're all going to succeed in a dual curriculum, that they're all going to be God-fearing and pious despite of all the values of the world around them. And you know what? They can. They can. They can do it. It doesn't make any sense that they can do it, but they can do it. Because we are, ki b'yitzchak yikari l'chazera, we have the ability to laugh. Laughter is the unexpected. Laughter is that which you can never have foreseen. But V'alachta B'drachav tells us that we could be like the Ribbono Shel Olam in that sense, just as there is nothing beyond that which the Ribbono Shel Olam can do in terms of what we can achieve in the Avoda of Hashem. There is nothing beyond our capacity, our capabilities. And with that, I wish you all a wonderful Shabbos, and thank you for coming to learn with me this morning.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Rabbi. Have a wonderful Shabbos.